This is EAA Radio, AM 1210, FM 100.7, and on the web at airventure.org.
In order to preserve the anonymity of the reporter, the FAA never learns from the filing of the report who made the report, and preserves the confidentiality of the report. What happens is, when we look at the form, you will see that NASA date stamps the form and then de-identifies everything else in the form, so that the only thing that NASA keeps are the substantive information, but nothing about the identification of the person making the report or the nature of the report. Now, whether you get the benefit of the program or not, FAA still will make a finding of violation. And all of the procedures that my associates are going to be talking about the procedures that are attendant to an FAA enforcement action, those will be available to you. You may still contest the FAA's allegations, and you get advantage of all these procedures, and win or lose, losing means you get a record violation, which we'll probably talk about later. But nevertheless, the sanction will not be imposed if the program doesn't have some of the exceptions we'll talk about. I hear the exceptions. One exception is if NASA sees that the report is identifying an accident, then accidents do not qualify for the program. That report's going to be sent over to the NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board. Because it is an accident, and NTSB has the responsibility for determining those. But let me caution you, because what we commonly understand as an accident is not what the FAA interprets to be an accident, or what NTSB interprets to be an accident. And if we have some time later on, Harry, I can go into that in some detail. But there are a lot of aviation mishaps that could involve a lot of damage to the aircraft, that could involve personal injury, yet that would not be considered an accident. So just because you think it's an accident, don't hesitate to file a NASA report. Criminal offenses are also an exception. If NASA sees that the report is identifying a crime, then without being de-identified, that's going over to the FAA and the Department of Justice for whatever prosecution they deem appropriate. But except for those two exceptions, those are the only two exceptions where you don't get the benefit of the anonymity and confidentiality. Those are the only two limited circumstances where you should even hesitate about filing a NASA report. Because all of the other exceptions that I will talk about, you will still get the benefit of anonymity and confidentiality. According to the advisory circular, which spells out the Aviation Safety Reporting Program, the program only applies if what happened was inadvertent and not deliberate. Now, that's a common sense exception. You can't have airmen running around in our national airspace system committing violations merely on the basis that they know that they can cut off the sanction merely by reporting making a report to NASA. So, deliberate violations are out. What is inadvertent is arguable. We may be able to get into that in some detail at a later time, but this is one of the exceptions. For sure, deliberate violations are an exception to the program. Also, another common sense exception is if what happened raises a reasonable question in the FAA's mind about the competency or the qualification of the airman, then the program will not apply. Now, this language is so general, you could see that the FAA could take advantage of that exception and make it apply in almost every instance. FAA does not. They have been very reasonable in this interpretation. If it truly shows that the airman lacks competency or qualification, then they're going to have to go after that airman's certificate, and the program will not apply. Now, here's the one that's commonly misunderstood in the aviation community. It's misunderstood to mean you can only file one report every 5 years. That's wrong. What the program says is if you have had a finding of violation, an official finding of violation, an order issued by the FAA making that finding, then for a period of 5 years after that, you're not going to get the benefit of the program. But you can file every day, every flight, in my recommendation, every time there is an incident which could possibly lead to FAA enforcement, you got to file a NASA report. Now here's what the form looks like. This is what it looks like folded up. And you'll notice that it's frank. And by that I mean you don't need to put a stamp on it. You can drop it in the mail and it will be delivered. And of course you can file online as we've already talked about. But should you do that? And my recommendation, I'm sure the recommendation of my associates is send it certified return receipt requested. Pay the postage because it could get lost going to NASA. The identification strip coming back to you could get lost. Filing it the way I'm suggesting will give you at least the evidence that you have made a filing. Nevertheless, though, if you don't want to, it is frank and you can mail it without postage. Here's what it looks like opened up. And it's really the top part, the top quarter part, is what we call the identification strip. This is the only place where there should be any identifying information about the person who filed it. And you will see it calls for not only name, address, telephone number, but the date of the occurrence, the time of the occurrence, and the nature of the occurrence. And all of this is to show to the FAA that you filed this with respect to a particular incident. Without this information, then you could be filing for anything. That's not going to happen. When NASA gets the form, you will see in the right-hand corner there's a blank space, and that's where NASA date stamps it, takes that part, that top quarter, and mails it back to the reporter. NASA does not maintain any identifying information, so that there's no danger, there should not be any danger, that anybody can get from NASA the fact that you made that kind of a filing. Okay? Harry, if I have some time, I want to talk about one particular case, because it's kind of interesting. This one airman ran out of fuel and had to effect an emergency landing on a road and decided that the airman was going to take advantage of the program and filed a NASA report. Filled it out completely. We'll talk about the rest of the filling it out. But where it called for the nature of the offense, of the event, it said ran out of fuel. FAA, of course, investigates the incident. They arrive on the scene. There's some question about whether there was enough fuel on board the aircraft, and the FAA proceeds by way of enforcement action. And the airman says, now, wait a minute. I have filed a report with NASA. The FAA said, no. The airman appealed the case to the National Transportation Safety Board. You're going to be hearing more about that. And the airman introduced the top strip into evidence. And the top strip, of course, now has this admission by the airman that if the airman ran out of fuel. And the FAA said, oh boy, we're going to take advantage of that and argue to the judge that that was an admission of a violation. Well, the case went forward before the NTSB. The airman lost the case. The airman lost the case on appeal to the NTSB. But then there was a great hue and cry from the aviation community. We even have an FAR, a regulation that says the FAA may not use any information from this program in an enforcement case. And this brouhaha finally went to the legal counsel, the top lawyer in FAA, and the top lawyer in the FAA said, yeah, you're right, that should not have happened, and sent out a letter to all of the lawyers saying, don't do this again, you're not supposed to use this information in an enforcement case. The problem is solved, but nevertheless, I always use that case as an illustration. When you get to the point that says the type of event or situation, be careful how you describe it. Remember, the only purpose of that is to help identify the event which is being reported. This airman could have said precautionary landing, or he could have identified the identification in a lot of ways. Airspace violations, you could be saying air traffic control, something very general, but not so general that it would not identify the event. Okay, let's keep going. The rest of the form below the identification strip calls for a lot of information. And this is where NASA hopes to get a payoff on unsafe conditions in our airspace system. In truth, you could fill out gibberish. You could not fill out anything, and you will still get the benefit of the program. But the main purpose of the program, as I suggested to you, is aviation safety, and I suggest to you that you should fill out the rest of the form. This is the identification strip in a little greater detail, and you can see where it talks about the type of event or incident. This is the identification strip that you get back. NASA has no information once that's mailed to you. And Harry, that's about it on aviation safety reporting program.
John, let me just add one thing. What you all need to understand is that you don't have to wait for the violation involved. This is the best way to communicate a problem to the FAA. And they look at these. They look at every one of these things and they category them. I was riding as a jump seat in an airliner some time ago going into Dulles. And when the airline landed, there was a pilot in a 310 behind us who got lost on the taxiway. I mean, you can get lost at Dulles quite easy on the taxiways. And every time he kept asking for help, the controller just got really nasty, you know, giving him a hard time and I'm sure intimidated him. And I got so upset by it, I sent a report into NASA. I said an abusive ground controller does nothing but create confusion, chaos in the cockpit, and should be stopped. I sent a report in. If you see something at an airport that you don't like construction going on, or you don't like the way the airport lights are marked, or something of that, anything which might help safety, send a NASA report in. I'll guarantee you, you'll get quicker action than you will maybe calling somebody at FAA and making the complaint. These get reviewed, they get looked at, they get classified, and are disseminated to the proper authority for potential action. So it's something to consider. Mike, you had a hand up?
Yeah, just one thing. I know probably most of you here are pilots, but the NASA program also applies a separate form for a pilot, a mechanic, cabin crew, and ATC. So any one of those four groups can file these NASA programs.
Thank you.
And they're different color codes.
Good point. Thank you.
Okay, deal.
Okay. Any other questions?
Okay. Let's pick up the process and let me talk to you about what happens, how the thing gets started. In your report, you notice you've got a little scenario which says that I flew into Oshkosh and along the way, I think something might have happened. I was IFR and in the turbulence and getting pretty bad. I had trouble holding my altitude. ATC asked me to call them when I'm landed. Now, this is not an uncommon occurrence. And the question you have now is, what do I do? Do I call them? Do I not call them? Let's start with the easiest part of it. There is nothing that can happen to you because you don't call. Nobody is going to use that as any evidence that you did something wrong in any future or subsequent action. It's just a way to perhaps maybe solve the problem. But you must understand that when you call them, there are going to be notes taken and a record made of your call, and particularly if you called ATC, there are phone recorders on almost all of ATC's phones coming into towers or any other ATC facility. There's a whole bunch of reasons for that and doesn't necessarily mean to entrap the individual that called. So before you call, think what you want to say and understand that any admission that you make, if they say, hi, were you the pilot of 6241 Yankee that just landed? Yes, I was. That solves that problem. They know who flew the airplane. And if they ask you, can I have your name and address, please, before we start talking, and you give it to them, that solves the second problem. They know you flew the airplane, and they know where to locate you. So just be careful what you're doing and what you want to do. I always tell people to call, depending on what the violation is and what it's all about, but just think of what's going to happen and understand that you are on the record. One of the things that I have seen clients do in these cases is they say, well, look, I don't know what this is all about, but I want to find out a little more information about what you're asking me about before I decide to discuss this thing with you or make any admissions. Now, one of the things that you can do, and it'll happen a little later in trial procedures, but you have the option under the Freedom of Information Act to request copies of any ATC transcripts, to request copies of any information or statements that the FAA may have taken in preparation for an enforcement action. Now, what if an FAA inspector comes to see you? He wants to talk to you. This is not uncommon. What if he wants to, you've just landed your airplane, and as you taxi up, he comes up and talks to you and says, well, did you check the weight and balance of this airplane before you left? Stop right there. Turn to the last page of this handout. I don't ordinarily read things, but I'm going to read this with you because it is incredibly important. Appendix A. It is a crime to tell a lie to the federal government, even if the lie is oral and not under oath, even though you have received no warnings of any kind, even if the government is not actually misled by your falsehood. Title 18, United States Code 1001, makes it a crime to, number one, knowingly and willfully, number two, make any materially false, fictitious, or fraudulent statement or representations, three, in any manner within the jurisdiction of the executive, legislative, or judicial branch of government. Who has the executive branch of government? The FAA and all of its inspectors. Now, such statement or representation can be made in response to a letter of investigation, we'll talk about that a little bit later, or to an FAA inspector who walks up to you on the ramp after you have landed from a flight and asks you about weight and balance or fuel reserves. It is important to understand that citizens are under no obligation to speak to a federal agent in the first place, although if you choose to do so, it's essential to learn how to decline not to speak to them. There are intelligent alternatives to lying or not telling the truth. The first and most important is to politely decline to be interviewed. Or you could tell the federal agent that you have an attorney and that, quote, my attorney will be in contact with you, end the quote. The essential thing is to keep in mind to say nothing of substance about the matter under investigation. It is preferable to do this by politely declining to be interviewed in the absence of counsel or until such time as you have had a chance to learn more about the matter under investigation, collect your thoughts, and formulate your response.